Hi, I'm Mark Kucinovich. I'm CTO of Azure, and I work across the Azure platform and with other partner teams across Microsoft. What I'm going to do is kick off the event by talking a little bit about the vision that Azure has for cloud computing, our differentiators with respect to other clouds, and talk a little bit about the transformation that we're undergoing and how IT professionals like yourselves can start to make that transition to the cloud. Some of the steps that you can take that are low risk, that get your feet wet with the cloud, and kind of set up the stage for the presentations that you're going to be seeing throughout the week. If there's one thing that I'd like you to take away from listening to my session, it is that there are a number of ways that you can get started very easily and start to deliver business value for your company without putting your data or mission-critical applications at risk as you move to the cloud. So like many of you, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. The movie had a huge impression on me when I was growing up, and I'm a collector of some movie memorabilia, including one of my prized possessions, which is the C-3PO head from Return of the Jedi.
Hey, how you doing? This is Rickster CDN, Rick Claus, here kicking off the Level Up Azure IaaS for IT Pros Week, and I'm joined by Mark Kucinovich. Just wanted to point out before we get started that this is a live stream. It's going live around the world to IT pros, sysadmins, and LAN admins all around the world. And it will be available on demand probably within 24 to 48 hours or so after the event goes ahead and wraps up. We've got an action-packed day of lots of speakers that are coming up today and also the next 4 days as well. But let me first of all grant the stage over to you, Mr. Kucinovich. You have the floor to give us a little bit of a view on Azure All Up and what's going on.
Thanks, Rick. Morning, everybody, or afternoon, or evening, or wherever you happen to be around the world watching this live. My name is Mark Kucinovich. I'm CTO of Azure, and I'm kicking off this event, I thought, with a little overview of what Azure is and how we see Azure evolving and differentiating against other cloud providers, why Azure, we believe, makes a great choice for you if you're considering moving to the cloud. I'll start by just talking about the rate of change that we've seen in Azure over the last 12 months. And it really goes to highlight the fact that Microsoft is 100% committed to Azure. And that just doesn't mean the core Azure group, but all of the other components of Microsoft working on building on the Azure platform, delivering features at an ever-increasing pace. I think we are releasing something like a feature every 3 days or something, and we expect that to go down to every couple days over the next year. Over the last 12 months, about 200 to 300 different features we've released. There's just a sample of them, all from large-scale features like BizTalk Services and Autoscale, GA'd, Traffic Manager GA'd, to relatively minor features like being able to send your HTTP logs to Azure Storage from your Azure websites. And not only have we been accelerating in terms of the pace of change and the delivery of features and functionality into Azure, we've also been accelerating in terms of growth of Azure. So you can see from this slide some of the statistics that really demonstrate the kind of scale that Azure is getting to and that we continue to accelerate into. In terms of adoption by the Fortune 500, you can see that over 57% of them are doing some kind of development or application deployments on top of Azure. In terms of the database usage, our Azure database, which you're going to learn about this week, we've got over 1.2 million databases, and that's growing at 10% month over month. And when it comes to Azure Storage, our Azure Blob and Table service, this slide says that we've got over 30 trillion objects now in our storage service. And this slide actually was authored about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I'm going to go ahead and make a real-time correction here because that statistic is no longer accurate. So not 30 trillion, but we've now up to, trying to draw here with the pad, 40 trillion objects. And that is also obviously growing at an incredible pace, just to go up 10 trillion objects in the last few months. Azure Active Directory, our identity service that I'll talk just a little bit more about and you'll also learn more about this week, that has over 350 million active users, identities provisioned inside of it, and it's serving over 18 billion authentication requests per week. When you take a look at Visual Studio Online, our Visual Studio continuous integration offering, which lets you build in the cloud on top of Azure as well as deploy into your Azure services, that has over 1.65 million active users, and that's also growing at 10% month over month. and our compute usage overall, which combines our infrastructure as a service, our platform as a service, cloud service offering, and our websites, that's growing at 280% year over year. But what makes Azure unique is the way that we focus on several different aspects that we believe that our competitors aren't focused on in the same way. One of them is hyperscale, another is hybrid and consistency, and the final one is enterprise grade. And I'll talk just a little bit about some of these and then conclude with a discussion about hybrid, which applies most directly to the content that you're going to be hearing this week. Hyperscale means a few things. One of them means a global footprint. Most of you are probably with companies that aren't just based in a single nationality, but are regional or even global in nature. And when it comes to picking a cloud provider, you want to go with a cloud provider that is where your customers are and where your business is at. Azure today has 19 active regions open across the world. This includes a number in the United States, Europe. We're the only active cloud provider with a public cloud offering today in China. We've got ones in Australia, our most recent ones, and we've announced two more that are going to be coming next year in India, which would bring us to 21 at the time that releases. When it comes to hyperscale, though, it's not just a global footprint. It is also being able to satisfy demand as it comes into the service and to be able to support the elasticity requirements of our customers. One of the promises of cloud is virtually infinite compute and data resources, and it's our job to provide that illusion with concrete infrastructure. So one of the things that we're doing is making sure that we can always satisfy the demands of our customers to scale out. We've got a data center strategy that defines our global hub regions as giant data center facilities that are about a football field in size. And just to put that in perspective, it can fit approximately two jets inside of it. I hope we never have to use them for jets, but that's how large they are. And when we go into a region, we know that the cloud is exploding, and so we're planning ahead in terms of years so that we can satisfy the explosive demand as it increases and never have to turn customers away. One of the beliefs that we've got is that saying no to a customer when they want to scale out is the same thing as not offering service at all. So we've planned these regions so that we can deploy up to 16 of these data center buildings that can hold those jumbo jets. And that means that we can serve up to 600,000, place up to 600,000 servers in each of these regions, which is a huge amount of capacity. And if you take a look at the increasing density of servers in terms of virtual machines, RAM, compute that you can place on them, that means that that is also an accelerating amount of capacity. We believe, actually, that all of you, whether you're small-scale deployment today or large-scale deployment, will require this kind of hyperscale deployment. Because whether you're small and you want to scale out by a few virtual machines, if you're going onto a cloud provider that isn't able to satisfy the demand in the locality that you want to scale out into, that's going to make you, obviously, dissatisfied and not be able to meet your business requirements. Like I said, our goal is to make sure that never happens, and that's why we've got this kind of strategy that includes global as well as large regional footprints. You can see on this slide some of the companies that are bet their businesses, or at least part of their businesses, on the Azure platform and our hyperscale regional and global reach. They include companies like Callaway, to MetLife, to Saab, to GE. And I'm going to talk a little bit about a few of them to demonstrate some of the ways that they're taking advantage of this kind of hyperscale. One of them is Milliman, one of our oldest customers, a customer that has a product, a SaaS offering called Integrate, which is actuarial modeling and financial reporting. And this SaaS offering they offer to their customers. Some of their customer deployments and the runs that they execute on a daily basis reach up to 50,000 cores in size, and that's just one of their customers deploying on top of that Milliman application. One of the reasons that Milliman is so happy with their deployment on Azure, their use of Azure, is that they've never had to turn a customer away, even at those kinds of scales, ever in the history of their usage of Azure. And we've made sure that we can satisfy that kind of scale demands. If you take a look at Takaneka, it's one of the largest building operators in infrastructure and building operators in Japan. And they've deploy IoT sensors all throughout their building so that they can track the utilization of the buildings, from the amount of traffic going into the buildings to the temperatures in the buildings. All of this data is being ingested into Azure, and that helps them to operate their business, their buildings more efficiently, and their customers that are inside those buildings operate them more efficiently as well. Like I said, though, it's not just hyperscale that makes Azure unique, because other cloud providers, we believe there's a couple of other cloud providers out there, you can probably guess who I'm referring to, that are also hyperscale. What makes us unique, though, are the combination of these other facets, like enterprise grade. In fact, when it comes to enterprise grade, Gartner is one of the most trusted analyst firms in looking at segments of enterprise computing, and they've got something called the Magic Quadrant, which places different vendors in one of four quadrants, with the coveted one being the Magic Quadrant, which is the upper right quadrant, which says that not only do you have vision, but you're also a leader and able to execute on that vision. And Microsoft's is a leader in that Magic Quadrant in all four of the enterprise computing Magic Quadrants, from cloud infrastructure as a service to enterprise application platform as a service, or PaaS, public cloud storage services, which includes our Azure storage service, and x86 server virtualization. X86 virtualization is an interesting one on this, because it will lead into my discussion of hybrid, because not only are we operating our cloud on top of Hyper-V and Windows Server, but we're making sure that we can deliver that same kind of technology that we're developing in our public cloud into your on-premises private clouds that you also build on Hyper-V and Windows Server. This is why, from that perspective, being a leader in this Magic Quadrant is important in terms of the hybrid. Let's talk a little bit more about the enterprise-grade advantage by taking a look at some of the other vendors that have taken a bet on Azure because of the enterprise-grade promises that we've got. One of them is GE Healthcare. GE Healthcare offers their customers and users the ability to store their health information and access it in a secure way. And it's only because Azure has achieved a whole slew of compliance certifications across a bunch of different industries and regulations that makes GE comfortable with placing healthcare data and making it publicly accessible to their customers on top of Azure. If you take a look at DataStax, DataStax is a storage vendor that it has their solution based on Hadoop. DataStax is also using developing a software package that is being used by their customers to store and index and search financial data. So for example, one of their customers is a title closing company that it plans on using DataStax on top of Azure to store eventually up to 18 billion documents, title closing documents, that they'll be able to search for their customers. And part of delivering this enterprise grade is being able to support not just the scale-out applications that cloud is known for, but the scale-up applications that customers are bringing from their on-premises environments to the cloud. And so for that reason, it's important that we not just provide this hyperscale scale-out capability, but we also provide machines that support virtual machine sizes that can deliver enterprise-grade computing. If you've been paying attention to some of the releases that we've had recently, then you're aware that just about a couple months ago, a month and a half ago or so, we released a new D-series of virtual machine sizes, which are our largest standard sizes of virtual machines, up to 60% faster CPUs than the previous generation A-size series, with more RAM, up to 112 gigabytes of RAM, and local SSD storage included and as an option. And that means that with that local SSD storage, you can use it, for example, as a buffer pool cache on top of SQL Server to accelerate the performance of SQL Server on top of our D-series. And this is one of the benefits we get of having these kinds of platform services like the SQL Server team here in Azure, or here in Microsoft, working closely with the Azure team to make sure that their applications work great on top of the offerings we've got in the cloud. You also might have heard of our G-series, which we announced about a month ago and should be available really soon. In fact, if you're watching this recorded, it might already be available. This G-series is our largest Haswell processor servers. We've got a variety of different VM sizes offered on the G-series, with the largest one having up to 32 CPU cores and 448 gigabytes of RAM with 6.5 terabytes of local SSD storage. this is the largest VM size available when we make it publicly available in the public cloud today. And again, great for those extreme mission critical tier one type of scale up workloads that you want to bring to the cloud. Storage is, of course, an important aspect of compute. When you've got a SQL database, for example, or a NoSQL application or web application, you want to store that data in durable storage like Azure Storage. And we've got a new offering that's going to be coming soon. It's available in limited preview right now, called Premium Storage. And with Premium Storage, you can attach up to 32 1-terabyte disks to your virtual machines. And those disks, in aggregate, will deliver up to 50,000 IOPS with latencies of less than 1 millisecond for read operations and just a few milliseconds for most write operations. This kind of performance, again, is targeted at those tier one kind of very data intensive with compute on the back end of data processing like SQL Server applications. And that's going to be coming soon as well. So that's a quick look at enterprise grade. Let's take a look at hybrid, though. And I think that this is the place where we uniquely differentiate ourselves because we're the only cloud provider that is committed to delivering consistent experiences across the cloud and on-prem offerings that we sell to our customers, as well as making sure that our customers can securely connect their on-prem environments to the cloud, as well as take advantage of cloud functionality from their on-prem deployments. And this includes a variety of different type of offerings. For example, in storage and backup, we've got something that you'll hear about this week called Store Simple, which is an appliance that you can place in your data center that is backed by cloud storage to create effectively an infinite storage pool of capacity made available to your on-premises servers through file sharing. And what this allows you to do is cache the hot data on that Store Simple appliance, have the Store Simple appliance automatically migrate the cold data back and forth between the cloud and on-prem as your users access it, and never run out of storage capacity. And we've seen several customers that have foregone any further purchases of SAN storage, expensive SAN storage, in lieu of purchasing Store Simple appliances that they can then take advantage of this infinite cloud storage. And this is, again, one of those places where the three areas of focus, the hyperscale, allows us to deliver cost here for storage that can't be met by anybody developing storage on-prem, just because the massive scale and the operational efficiency that we've got to operate at to get to that scale. Another example of the way that we integrate our server products with our cloud is in the area of backup. So for example, Data Protection Manager and Server Backup and SQL Server Backup all are able to integrate with cloud storage so that you can back up those applications up into the cloud and then restore them from the cloud, including per file and per database, per row type recovery of those objects. Disaster recovery, another area where we've made sure that our on-premises products integrate nicely with the cloud. We've got something called Azure Site Recovery, former Hyper-V Replica, that allows you to create a failover solution for your infrastructure as a service virtual machines that are deployed in your on-premises environment between your on-premises environments and your secondary on-premises environments being orchestrated through the cloud or from your on-premises environment to the cloud or vice versa. And so this is a great way if you're taking a look at not building out further infrastructure and making going all in on the cloud, a great way to leverage your existing assets by having your applications run primarily in your on-premises environments, but in the case of a disaster in your on-premises environments, being able to fail over to the cloud when your on-premises environment's back up and healthy, being able to fail back over. And that way, you get the benefits of disaster recovery, business continuity, without having to make an investment in additional data center build-out. Identity is another place that we have made a very concerted effort to make sure that on-premises environments can integrate with our cloud offering. I mentioned Azure Active Directory a little bit earlier. Azure Active Directory is an identity and directory store. And one of the benefits of Azure Active Directory is that you can tightly integrate it with your on-premises identity service. 95% of companies out there are using Server Active Directory as their identity management system, so many of you are probably using Active Directory. And when you go to the cloud, ideally, you don't want users to go and have to create separate identities to access their cloud services and their cloud resources that you've got up there. And that doesn't just include, not just including Azure resources and Office 365 that you might be using, but third-party software as a service offerings and platform as a service offerings. For example, if you want to use your on-premises identities to log into Salesforce, we've got integration with Salesforce as well as 2,400 other software as a service offerings through Azure Active Directory Federation. This allows your users to take their standard, use their standard identities, role-based access control, and their passwords, and have single sign-on across all of these cloud services, from their on-premises applications up into Azure, including Office 365. And finally, networking. That's another place that we've made a huge focus on, making sure that on-premises environments can integrate nicely with the cloud. And there's a few different ways that you'll learn about this week to integrate your on-premises networking with the cloud. One, for example, is great for dev test, and this is point-to-site networking, which allows you to install an agent on your local dev machine and create a secure VPN tunnel up into an Azure cloud service or infrastructure as a service virtual machine through a virtual network gateway. Another one is site-to-site, which lets your enterprise network architects set up an enterprise VPN device, which could actually be built on Server 2012 remote access server, and connect that up into Azure through a gateway. And then finally, for those enterprises that really want tight SLAs, high bandwidth, private connections to the cloud, we've got an offering called ExpressRoute, which GA'd earlier this year. And ExpressRoute, through a variety of different network service provider partners, including AT&T and Orange and British Telecom and a slew of others, allow you to use those providers that you might already have relationships with to connect to Azure. And the benefit of that is that it really just takes a day or two to provision that kind of connectivity directly into Azure's backbone through your network service provider to have that private, high bandwidth connection with an SLA into Azure's networks to make sure that all your cross hybrid traffic flows smoothly and securely between on-prem and the cloud. And then finally, one of the announcements that we made about a month ago is something called Cloud Platform System, CPS. Some people call Cloud Platform System Azure in a Box. And it's called Azure in a Box because it takes an offering that we've had already out in the market called Azure Pack and combines it with the appliance-like servers and racks that service provider Dell, being our first partner, we can come and install into your own data center. Let me talk just briefly about Azure Pack. That's something else you're going to be learning about this week. Azure Pack provides you a consistent management and deployment solution through software installation that you place on your own servers that gives you a portal that is the Azure portal. It's actually the exact same code that's running the Azure portal. Gives you the ability to deploy virtual machines using the same portal experience that you deploy virtual machines on in Azure, as well as a similar PowerShell experience and API experience. And finally, Azure Websites and Service Bus are some of the other cloud services that we bring back into the Azure Pack to make available in your on-premises environments. Azure Pack, like I said, we've had out for a while, and what you're going to see over the next few years as we continue to make good on this promise of consistency is the list of services and the consistency and breadth of services is going to continue to expand. This isn't something we're done with by any means. This is just a first step towards that consistency promise where eventually you'll have consistency across a foundational set of services that will allow your developers and your IT administrators to leverage the same tools, techniques, and development processes on-premises as they do in the cloud and be able to then not have to worry about am I deploying it on the cloud or am I deploying it on-premises, or maybe I've got an application that's spanning both, but being able to leverage the same tools and techniques and skills to manage and develop both of them. But CPS brings, like I said, a server appliance infrastructure underneath that. And this is a place where we're taking learnings from Azure in terms of high availability server design, as well as the designs of the servers themselves. We've made our server designs actually open source them, and those very same server designs are being developed by OEM partners like Dell and being sold now into the CPS offering. CPS is something that you can consume and is expandable. You can consume it in rack size chunks, where a rack supports up to 2,000 cores of virtual machine capacity and can grow up to 4 racks in the current offering to deliver up to 8,000 cores of capacity. And this is a pretty sizable amount of capacity. It's something we expect our larger on-premises enterprise customers to take advantage of, as well as third-party service providers that want to provide an Azure consistent experience in a hosted environment, perhaps reaching a customer segment that Azure doesn't reach, maybe with additional services bundled within that. And this gives them the ability to sell Azure as well as make Azure available to them so that their customers can take advantage of Azure as well as an Azure type offering in their clouds. So this hybrid advantage, let me talk a little bit about some of the customers that are taking advantage of this hybrid functionality. One of them here is General Dynamics. So General Dynamics is making use of Azure Pack and selling solutions based on Azure Pack and Azure to their customers. And their customers, of course, are some of the most security sensitive, as well as the most sensitive in terms of availability and enterprise grade capabilities of anywhere on the planet. They include defense contractors for the US government, as well as the US government itself, including the Defense Department. General Dynamics, by using and selling offers on top of Azure Pack and Azure, gives their customers the flexibility of deploying applications or storing data in their on-premises environments, or when their security requirements allow them to, and their risk profile allow them to place them up into Azure. But basically be able to move seamlessly that line wherever their current profile forces them or requires them to move it. And this kind of flexibility is something not available with other cloud providers. So that is a quick overview of Azure all up and some of the ways that we believe that we differentiate and we deliver service. Like I mentioned, hyperscale computing, where we've got 19 regions around the world. I failed to mention that is almost double the number of regions that Amazon's got. And hybrid computing, the big focus of tying your on-premises environment up into the cloud, as well as delivering a consistent experience between those two environments. This is going to be a big focus if you're looking at moving or taking advantage of the cloud, something that you definitely need to take advantage of in enterprise-grade computing. Let me talk just a little few minutes about some of the ways that I recommend that you get started and some of the ways that we see customers like you getting started in the cloud. Obviously, if you're new to the cloud, taking your mission-critical workloads and porting them up to the cloud probably isn't the wise thing to do. There's a lot of learning that you're going to have to do about how the cloud operates, what the cost profile is for the cloud, what the governance profile is for the cloud. So what we recommend is you getting your feet wet in a safe way that lets you learn about the cloud, but also take immediate advantage of some of the benefits of the cloud. I mentioned some of the offerings that we've got that help you start this journey into the cloud throughout this presentation. One of them, Store Simple. It's a great way to not buy any more on-premises storage and take advantage of the cloud and the cost benefits of cloud storage with very little risk. If you, from a security perspective, for example, Store Simple encrypts all of the data with keys that are kept back on the Store Simple appliance, so there's no unencrypted data ever presented up into the cloud. And so from a risk perspective, you can keep your most sensitive, your critical data, ensure that it's cached on that Store Simple appliance. You can make sure that it's encrypted as well before it goes up into the cloud. Another one is the backup. Just start taking advantage of backup, which again is a fallback scenario for you to take advantage of that backup, that data that's backed up into the cloud. Again, not having to build out additional storage infrastructure to store that backup. Another one is perhaps for the failover scenarios with Azure Site Recovery. Again, your mission-critical applications stay on-premises for the majority of their operation. If they ever fail on that infrastructure, they can move to another on-premises deployment or up into Azure, depending on your comfort with having those operate in Azure or with you wanting to take advantage of existing data center infrastructure that you already have in this kind of DR paired mode. Another way to get started is in dev test. So you're going to learn a lot about infrastructure as a service, the ability to start up SharePoint farms using PowerShell scripting and desired state configuration. And that is a fantastic way to get started, because most of you, if you come with traditional IT shops, know that when it comes to setting up a dev test environment, it's pretty much like setting up a production environment on your own infrastructure. You've got to file service tickets, request the servers, request the virtual machines, specify the configuration for the networking. And this process takes anywhere we find talking to customers from several weeks to even 2 to 3 months. When it comes to setting up those kinds of environments in the cloud, it literally is minutes to just a few hours when you're talking about a complex SharePoint farm, but certainly much less than the weeks or months that it might take you today on premises. Again, you're not putting any of your mission critical data at risk when you're talking about dev test. You're learning about the cloud. You're taking advantage of the agility of the cloud. Not just in terms of how quickly can I get a dev test environment stood up, but at the end of the day, when your developers go home, they simply shut down that environment and they're no longer paying for it until they come back the next morning and fire it up again. So in terms of the cost saving, potential cost savings of not just having infrastructure sitting around there idle constantly with those SharePoint farms, sitting there doing nothing while the developers are at home, now you release those resources, you're no longer paying for them, but you get them back quickly the next morning when you're ready to go again. So those are some of the ways that I think that we see customers getting started. Again, it's backup, DR, and dev test. And this week is going to set you up nicely, I think, with all the tools and information you need to get started in Azure to be successful across all three of those. So with that, I'll wrap it up here and turn it over to questions. I think we're going to take some questions that have been coming in from the audience here.
Yes, if you're joining us live on the live stream at channel9.msdn.com, there is a form available beneath the player. You can go off and submit some questions. We only have your valuable time of about 15 minutes or so during this live stream. And unfortunately, if you are watching this in replay mode, you can still have a conversation and talk about some questions with the hashtag Level Up Azure, and you know, I'll be monitoring that in case there's some other things, and I'll flag them for you in case something comes up. We have three questions up here. The first one's kind of interesting. Maybe you can talk about this from an architecture perspective.
Yeah.
Why Azure VM RAM is not a standard two-star pattern or two-by pattern. So you got 1.75 instead of 2, you've got 112 instead of 128. Is there any kind of rhyme or reason between those?
Yeah,
that curiosity?
Actually there is. If you look for the We do scale by 2x when you talk about the different sizes, like the A series. We go from 1.75 to 3.25, whatever that is, double that. But the reason that we leave slack there and don't nicely round it out, obviously you can guess that if our largest, one of our largest VM sizes, like 112 gigabytes for our D series, and the question is, it appears obvious that we probably have 128 gigabytes of RAM in that server. Where did the other RAM go and why aren't we giving it to you? The answer is that we need RAM for the host operating system itself, as well as to describe the virtual RAM of those virtual machines. So there's something, if you want to get technical here, there's something called the PageFrame database, which describes RAM and maps those virtual machines, and that takes a certain amount of footprint as well.
Okay.
And so for that reason, generally the larger the server, the larger the VMs that we place on them, the more we'll have to set aside to keep track of it, to do that bookkeeping for those VMs.
I remember reading someplace in one of the technical articles talking about if you're going to be provisioning very large machines, you want to actually provision those first and then have your smaller machines to go with them to make sure that they're closer inside the different racks, the different fault areas that we happen to have, probably also related to the architecture side of things too. I don't know if that still applies anymore.
Do you really? You read a technical article that said that?
I think someone said that in their technical article.
I think they were making something up.
Could be. Yeah. It could be. You are the CTO after all. It's there. David has a question here about for on-premises to cloud disaster recovery, does that require that the workloads on-premises to be running on a Hyper-V virtual machine?
So for the, obviously for the Azure Site Recovery, it does. That is built on System Center and Hyper-V and Windows Server. So.
Right.
For that offering, it does. There's other offerings made by other customers, like Symantec, that don't require you to run on top of Hyper-V, that are more of a migration of the virtual machine itself. We also have something called InMaj, which I didn't mention. It's an acquisition that we made this fall, which allows you to migrate virtual machines from one environment to another one. And that is an in-virtual machine migration. So it's independent of the hypervisor, and it supports migration of VMware into Azure, as well as from AWS into Azure, of those virtual machines as well.
We also have another question up there. Would the stored data be encrypted? Would it be possible for others to view that stored data? So obviously encryption is a technology and a thing that a lot of people have on top of their minds as far as Azure is concerned.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? I know we will be talking a bit about this later on this week. But
yeah. So today, what we do is provide tools for customers to be able to encrypt the data that they store into Azure itself. I mentioned Store Simple, which is one place where I touched on encryption during my overview. And Store Simple, as well as Server Backup and SQL Server Backup, encrypt before sending the data up into the cloud. So all of those do client-side encryption. We also provide tools to do client-side encryption. At this point, we don't have server-side encryption for the data, but that's something that we're working on to address that.
I know that there's also, I work with the team that talks about partners and different offerings that are available inside the gallery as an example, and there's a number of security technologies, encryption technologies that our partners offer that run on top of the Azure space.
That's true.
For virtual machines.
Exactly.
As an example.
Yep.
Down to the point of actually having BitLocker capabilities and that sort of stuff, all through partner offerings, which is very, very cool. That's in there. I'm going to ask you one here specifically. As you talked about some ways of getting your feet wet and just starting with Azure. Obviously, this week is a good week to start because we'll be covering a broad range of everything over the course of the 4 days, including open source and Linux and other things like that too. But can you just touch on maybe a couple of skills possibly that people can brush up on besides some of the offerings that you might think would be valuable for an IT professional or a sysadmin, landadmin to get their feet wet besides trying stuff out? What about some skills they might be able to use?
So skills, I think one of the most important skills when it comes to the cloud is understanding networking. Because networking is important from a security perspective as well as obviously connectivity. And if you're going to connect if you're going to have hybrid connectivity, it's important to understand what a subnet is, what a CIDR address is, what an ACL is, understand standard ports that are going to be in use so that you can secure your deployments, your cloud services, your virtual machines. Really important part of the cloud of connecting everything together. Important to know.
I remember when I first started off making some site-to-site VPN connectivity with our built-in gateway software that we have, having to remind myself how many bits of the mask I had to use to be able to reserve, to be able to have the gateway's network as well as the network up in Azure to be able to do it. So good point there on that one there. Obviously, PowerShell is going to be something if you're not
PowerShell,
already up on that
PowerShell, that is kind of the standard language of speaking to Azure. If you're a Windows IT pro, then you're probably already familiar with PowerShell. And desired state configuration, that's another great technology that is relatively new, but a fantastic technology for configuring your virtual machines and getting that configuration set up. So we've got, for example, a desired state configuration deployment of SharePoint that one of the benefits of desired state configuration is it goes from a purely imperative model to a somewhat declarative model so that makes it easy for you to understand what your system is going to look like when it's done versus looking at a whole bunch of commands and having to process them in your head.
Definitely a lot easier. I think we've got a little bit of that coming up with some automation with Joe Levy talking about DSC and how that also works in.
Yeah.
And I think we're actually going to be talking about that on Linux side too from doing some stuff with Chef and with Puppet coming up on day three. So.
Yeah, and I guess that's one thing that I didn't really touch on, but part of our enterprise grade is making sure that we support the technologies that our enterprise customers use. And some of those technologies include Chef and Puppet. We've got built-in Chef and Puppet plugins into our infrastructure as a service virtual machines. This is, I think, a unique capability of our infrastructure as a service, which is starts to border on platform as a service, and that is the use of our guest agent that allows you to inject plugins into those virtual machines. And some of those include those security offerings you mentioned earlier, some of those disk encryption or anti-malware, including our own anti-malware into the virtual machines, as well as to the Chef and Puppet agents. You can even, there's a PowerShell experience where you go and configure a new virtual machine. You say that you want the Chef agent or the Puppet agent in there, and then you specify some configuration for how it talks to the Puppet Master, the Chef server, and you're up and running and now have another machine that you can deploy configuration to.
That actually kind of answers Jacob's question that I was asking about Azure being integrated with the Linux environment. And so just for Jacob's knowledge, we will be doing this on day three, is almost exclusively on the Linux and open source side of things. Make sure you come back for that one there.
Yep, five Linux distros.
Yes.
In fact, I think one of those pigs fly moments was when we released Infrastructure as a Service Preview, which went out the same day with Linux support as well as with Windows support. But another follow-up to that was Satya in San Francisco about a month and a half, a little over a month and a half ago. with a slide in his presentation that said Microsoft loves Linux. And so we've got now 5 Linux distros, including the most recent one, CoreOS, which we supported. Again, we made that announcement about a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I think it covers about 80 to 86% of the most common distros. It's probably up even higher now when we announced the capability for that one there. Colin has a question here about Azure IaaS setting up to deal with the depletion of IPv4 addresses. Are you able to talk on that one a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. So IPv4 is becoming scarce, and Microsoft being who Microsoft is, we've got a whole pool of IPv4 addresses. We're also going and buying IPv4 addresses that show up on the market. So occasionally there'll be a telecom company that goes under or is trying to make money, and we'll put up their IPv4 addresses, and of course there's a stiff competition to go get them. So because we know it's going to be a while before we transition to IPv6. IPv6 is definitely something that's on our roadmap, so building IPv6 support to help people transition off. But IPv4 addresses are something we want to make sure that we have enough of them to satisfy the demands of our customers until we all make the transition to a new and better world.
I can kind of picture us sitting there on like some kind of auction site waiting for
the
last
the
couple
works,
of seconds
yeah.
to snipe in and grab that last possible one.
Yeah.
How about Richard? How will Docker change Azure? Like, I know you did a little bit of a Docker demo coming up on the TechEd Europe keynote stage a little while ago. A couple of minutes left. Talk a little bit around the Docker side, although we are going to be covering this again on day 3.
Well, I think Docker is not just changing Azure, it's changing the way enterprises do software deployment. One of the things that we talk about internally in Azure is that Docker is effectively the new VHD format. Mm-hmm. It's the way now that people or enterprise developers are now packaging up their software and deploying it into virtual machines. Mm-hmm. And the benefits of it are just dramatic in terms of the predictability that you get out of having this isolated environment where you can run it on your development system, get the same, have resource isolation, have namespace isolation, have the application work basically in a nice confined bubble that can't be interfered with from the outside, and then take that bubble and deploy it up into a virtual machine in production and expect that it's going to operate the same way. And be able to activate it very quickly because you're not booting a whole operating system. So in the terms of the way it's changing Azure, it's changing all of enterprise IT. One of the things that we're doing is partnering very closely with Docker. Mm-hmm. I think we've got one of the deepest relationships of any of the cloud providers with Docker. You mentioned the TechEd keynote demo I did of Docker, which was the Docker client for Windows that we worked on with Docker and has been checked in now into Docker's GitHub that allows you to deploy Docker containers onto Linux from Windows. We're also, of course, and we announced it back then, or just the week before TechEd, that we're working on our own container technology in Windows, and again, working closely with Docker to make sure that Docker works nicely with those containers, and that we support Docker Hub and Azure as well, and make those Windows container images available through Docker Hub as well, through partnership with Docker Hub.
Mm-hmm. How about some things to watch? Obviously, we can't talk about futures. I don't want to get you in trouble, and I don't want to get me in trouble. So how about some areas to watch, just in cloud technology in general, that when you sit down with your other technical fellows from other companies and you're having a couple of pints or something like that, what are some areas that you'd like to watch in the upcoming future?
Yeah, actually, Docker and containers, that's the number one topic of conversation these days, because Docker didn't exist a year and a half ago, and
now
you cannot go anywhere without having somebody talk about Docker and how Docker's changing the way that they do business and develop applications. So that and microservices, orchestration, cross-machine orchestration of Docker containers is a huge topic of conversation across the industry and certainly within Azure. We're looking at how we ride that wave and make it possible for customers to deploy Docker containers or microservices that are PaaS in nature, not just this kind of infrastructure as a service, take your existing applications and put them in containers, but write new applications that integrate with the runtime but leverage that same kind of packaging format and orchestration and cross container configuration system that is being built up now for these kind of infrastructure as a service containers. That's a big topic. Another one, if you take a look at, I mentioned our data center evolution, but data centers, the design of data centers is constantly changing. If you look at the savings in energy or the PUE of our Microsoft data centers in the last 15 years, we've dropped them by close to 20%.
Wow.
And so that is, our goal, right, is getting to 1.0. We're like at 1.8 or something like that, and we continue to look at that remainder and say, how can we get rid of that so that we're purely efficient? We're carbon neutral in our newest data center. So data center design, where you're building out a data center that's environmentally friendly, that is power efficient, and yet supports the availability requirements of these kinds of applications we've been talking about, is a big area. Mm-hmm. Another one is the server, the evolution of the server. So I think that there's now consensus building that the server is something that's going to change radically in the next 5 years. It's not, you're not going to be deploying servers. You're going to have disaggregated resources, and essentially the rack will be the server. And the benefits of the rack becoming the server is this dynamic composition of resources that you don't get today. You get today with server, you get a fixed amount of RAM, CPU, and disk, and this limits your abilities to combine things together. Mm-hmm. And so this is why we've got these kind of building block VMs, where you see that all of those resources kind of scale together. Once things become disaggregated, then you can take a one-core VM and attach it to huge amount of RAM, or take lots of core, you know, many core VM and attach it to a small amount of storage. Being able to better size the resources to the application's needs mm-hmm. is something that we're going to see.
Just going to take a look at our time and time check. It looks like we're almost out of time. Any closing thoughts just to kind of wrap it up for your particular segment?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's going to be a great week. The mm-hmm. content is fantastic. The speaker lineup's great. And I recommend, just if you get your feet wet, like once you watch one of these segments, to go and start playing with the portal, playing with PowerShell, and just get involved, just start getting your hands dirty mm-hmm. with it, and that will give you confidence to make a plan for how you're going to get to the cloud.
Mm-hmm. So you can actually go right now if you wanted to azure.com, and in the top right-hand corner, there is a trial button, and if you haven't already, you can obviously go and register yourself for a trial. Just be aware that obviously this is going to be a consumption-based service. We give you a bit of a credit to get started, and then from there, once you've exhausted that credit, you're going to be responsible for those compute and other types of services resources. But don't be worried. Go off and try that out. Coming up next.
You want to mention the MSDN credits, right?
Actually, yes, MSDN as well is available if you have MSDN. At different levels of subscriptions, you get different amounts on a regular monthly basis. And then also, if your company's already provisioned an enterprise agreement and done some bulk purchases in advance of Azure as well, you can go to the portal and get yourself signed up to use those different types of resources. I'm actually going to be covering those kind of things at the end of the day, so you will be able to see it. But thank you so much for taking time out on the day after a holiday to be able to come here first thing in the morning.
All right.
I really appreciate
Thanks for
you coming
me.
By.
Yep.
We've got Corey Sanders coming up next to go into some more depth about Azure IaaS. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.